All right, welcome back. Man, what a great song. Unbelievably great. Seriously. I've got some really cool stuff lined up tonight as far as the bumper music goes. Tonight's my third year. I can't believe it. Here on Coast. And my guest 3 years ago was Peter Lavenda. So he is here tonight. So much has changed in Peter's world, your world, and my world in the last 3 years. And we're going to be discussing all of that. The phone lines are already full. It's Friday night, so we are going to get to your phone calls next. All right, it's Friday night. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm your host, Jimmy Church, which means open lines for the rest of the night. And for the next hour, they'll be with Peter Lavenda. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie tonight. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. And I'm sitting here. Twitter's live to my left. And during the show, that's what I'm doing during the commercial breaks. I'm catching up with the madness over there on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Any questions or comments, I will, if it's good, I'll read it on the air. All right, let's take some phone calls. Peter, are you ready?
Sure.
All right, let's start out west. Let's go west, young man. Let's go to Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Robert, you're up first on Coast. Welcome.
Hello. I want to be respectful. The last 60 minutes has had a lot of generalities, and I was hoping for a lot more specifics and have cases referenced. I know the guest wants to be informative. I just hope it doesn't get to the point where he says something like, I can't tell you because it's a secret. I know someone once said that to George Norrie about the Fatima prophecies, and it became a bit of a stumbling block on the show, couldn't really proceed. Anyway, I'll let you guys go with that. And also, I know you said you're going to discuss the Lovecraft book and get into that. So I'll just hang up and let you get on with your next points.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Peter, like I said, nobody is going to be 100% satisfied. Right. It's just the way that it is here. But are you guys discussing just that? I mean, I would think, Peter, that the amount of stock purchases and things that are needed for revenue generation over at To the Stars would go through the roof if you guys just produced something.
Well, what would you like us to produce, Jimmy? What do you think would be the thing that would convince you of what? I mean,
well, like I said, Peter, me, I don't need to be convinced of anything.
Exactly.
But like this caller just said, though, right. I want facts. I want facts. You know, and that's what I'm saying. You're never going to make everybody happy, no matter what you guys reveal.
Sure. And I understand that, you know, and I'm not here stumping for To the Stars Academy or anything like that. I'm really just, you know, talking about my own experience with this whole program. But how can I put this in a way that makes any kind of sense? If you look at the team members, right? You have Hal Putoff on there. You have Chris Mellon. You have Jim Semivan. You have Luis Elizondo. All these guys and some women showing up from their respective backgrounds. We have a geneticist, neurobiologist, and all of this. Why are they there? You know, why have they decided to come on board with something like this when they could lose their reputations by even being associated with something like this? Why are they doing it? We're trying to say things without coming out and saying them. I know it makes everybody very frustrated when they hear this. Tom sometimes will go on interviews and will be more specific in some cases, but that's up to him to do, not to me. But what we're trying to do is set the stage for the kind of information we're trying to impart. And it's got to be understood on multiple levels at the same time. And I've been saying this now for a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and I know I'm criticized for it. They say you can just come out and say this or say that. It's not going to work. It's just not going to convince anybody. If I say that, from my point of view, I'm satisfied 100% that there has been contact, that, you know, this is a fact of life, that this is true, that's not going to convince anybody. Everybody's going to have a different standard for evidence. People are going to want to see documents. We're awash in documents. You know, we are awash in UFO sightings. We're awash in this.
Right.
That hasn't convinced anybody yet.
Right.
So forget documents. Now where do we go? We've got photographs. We've got videos. We have more videos. Tom is going to be releasing videos over the next few weeks that he got from the DOD, right, of UFO sightings. What's going to happen when we do that? Do you think that's going to change the conversation? I don't think so.
Well, I hope that
people will accept it. Some people are going to attack it. Some people are going to try to debunk it.
Right.
I mean, we're going to be back where we started. We're trying to take this conversation to a different level. We're trying to jumpstart into a different way of looking at this.
I want to ask.
It's not going to get us bogged down in conspiracy theory.
Sure, sure, sure. Peter, let me jump in really quick before we go back to the phones. Yeah. Are these videos that Tom has been talking about? Have these been in the public before, or have these never been seen?
Never been seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that will change the conversation. There's no question about that.
Will it?
Yeah. Well, I hope.
I'm not 100% sure that it will. I've seen what's happened in the UFO community over the last few decades that I've been investigating it.
Sure.
Nothing seems to work. you know what I mean? The believers believe. And those who don't.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Have you seen these videos, by the way?
No, I have not.
Okay. All right. So then I can't ask you any questions. Okay, let's go out to Florida. Let's go out to one of your neighbors, Alan, out in Inverness, Florida. Welcome to Coast.
Inverness, Jimmy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Alan.
I called on Fader Night. I'm the one that told you about my retired first sergeant that seen the one at Clearfork that rose up over the water and looked like it was purging something. Remember?
Yeah, well, welcome. And I don't know how you got through on the coastlines. That's a good job, Alan. What do you have for Peter?
First time I called in. Peter, I don't know. I know what I've seen. I know what my uncle was with me. He's a very honorable man. He's led men and NOM and everything. And you can have 500 people that seen one, the 500 that don't. And they're not going to convince one or the other that they didn't see it or they did. How about a news network? How about a fact checker facts of you guys with, you know, legitimate politics, world events, and like a 10 minute segment on UFOs, stuff can be explained that with legit pictures, like you said, the DOD pictures and stuff like that, and run it 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock, just like the regular news networks.
Well,
let's get it out there.
Let me jump right in on that then, because that is what Tom has been talking about, doing an unscripted documentary, you know, news type of program that's going to keep everybody up to date on what we're doing and what we're discussing and how we're proceeding. That's exactly what we're intending to do. I mean, Tom has already been doing some of the filming for that, as far as I know. So this is exactly where we're headed. What we're trying to do is bring everybody up to speed. Now, as you said, 500 people could see it and 500 people not, and they'll be fighting over it. And it doesn't matter at this point what we do where that's concerned. If all we're trying to do is convince you that the phenomenon is real, from our point of view, that's a non-starter. People already have their minds made up. So for us, what we're going to do is we're going to go a little bit further than that. We're going to start reinterpreting our world in terms of this phenomenon, right? You're going to see where you fit into it, where we all fit into it, what contributions we can make, and what contributions we can make to each other where this is concerned, because this is the 21st century approach to this problem. And this is how we're going to proceed, which is why we need scientists from different types of disciplines. We need to understand this as well as we can, because it seems to defy rational explanation based upon the kind of science we already know and the kind of way we look at reality, which to a certain extent, not completely, but to a certain extent is socially constructed, let's face it. So we're going to try to get past that, and we're going to try to have people experience this phenomenon on their own, give them the tools to do some of this on their own. Those who are really interested in it can, you know, participate in it this way. Tom has already talked about that, of making technology available to people in general, that they're going to be able to contribute to more and more information gathering and data gathering on this phenomenon. So if I sit there and I give you drawings and I bring out, you know, videotapes and all the rest of it, man, I've been here before. You know, I mean, I try to convince people of things that have nothing to do with UFOs, and I can have a mountain of documentation, and it's not going to make any difference, right? We can go back to the Kennedy assassination, for instance. We can go back to all kinds of stuff and say, look at this document, look at this document, look at this. This is obviously means this. And people, because of their mindsets, they're going to say, yeah, well, no.
Alan, thank you for the phone call. Great. You know, and I think that everybody can agree on that, but we need to take things to the next level. We just have to. Let's go to Wild Card. Let's go to Tom out east in Baltimore. Tom, you're up next on Coast.
Good morning, gentlemen. If I could just start out with a quick comment on this 99th year of celebrating Armistice Day, I really would like to thank all past, present, and future veterans and their families for the tremendous sacrifice that they've made for this country. I'm sorry, Veterans Day. I think I just dated myself a bit there.
Yeah, just a little bit, but we all appreciate that, because without that, you and I, Tom and Peter, wouldn't be talking right now on the air. So thank you for that. Tom, what's your question for Peter?
Okay, I think I'll satisfy the gentleman from Arizona. I'm a retired police officer, so like Joe Friday, you'll get nothing but facts from me. I wanted to share two UFO experiences I had. My question, though, first and foremost, is this. I'm always surprised to hear how people are treated unfairly or discriminated against, like pilots. They were George was talking last night about this with the guest, and military personnel, they have problems, it seems, at least to a lot of reports we hear, after they report such things. However, back in the 90s, I'm retired now, we go to the academy. We go back to the police academy in Baltimore City each year for updates, new laws, and updated training issues. Now, one year, we were taught about what to do with a crashed, it was called several things. UFO was outright stated, an aerial crash, an unidentified crashed aerial vehicle, it was also referred to, and how to treat such things. We were taught to treat it like a hazmat scene, which we had pretty extensive training in. Now, if the government is that open with this sort of thing, now it didn't say these were outer space unidentified flying objects. However, they didn't shy away from using UFOs, so it surprises me how people are discriminated against. And if I could real quick tell you about what I experienced.
Well, Tom, let me jump in really quick, because we're right up against a network break and I don't want to cut you short. Did you have a question for Peter? I need Peter to have time to respond.
Well, I'm wondering, number one, why he thinks people are discriminated against when the government seems pretty open about it. And I also wanted to ask him, can people really be sure of what they've seen? And I was going to share an experience about a UFO that I actually investigated officially.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Tom. Peter?
Yeah, people are discriminated against for the reasons we've really been talking about, I think, the last hour or so. The government is not, the government itself is not going to come out and verify the existence of this phenomenon unless they can tell the rest of us that they can defend us against it. They're not going to come out and verify this unless they can explain what it is. And I think one of the reasons why we have not heard this from the government is because they are still in the dark as to what this phenomenon really, really is. And unless you can predict when these things are going to show up, unless you're going to predict what effect they have on people and the contacts, the various close encounters, first, second, third kind, etc., unless you can tell people this, unless you can explain it to them, there's really no margin in coming out and saying, yes, people, you know, yes, Virginia, there is an alien, right? It's not going to happen until the government can come out and say, yes, there's aliens, and here's what we're doing about it, right? Because right now, all they're doing about it is, as the gentleman said, you know, putting on their hazmat suits and going and collecting the debris.
Right.
That's just, you know, that's not going to help anybody. So they're not going to talk about it.
Are you suggesting that they would have to be in the position of saying, yes, aliens are here, we've been in contact, but you have nothing to worry about?
Yeah. And who's going to believe that?
Right. And, right? Well, you can't really take that position unless you don't have anything to worry about.
And people who've had the sightings, people who have had the experience, They have disclosure. It happened to them, right? It's kind of democratic, you know? It's not happening from the top down. It's happening from the bottom up, and that's probably the way it should be.
Why do you think it has been, Peter, that we haven't had an alien invasion? You know, if they are that technically advanced, certainly if they really wanted this planet, they could just take it from us, couldn't they?
Well, they probably don't want it.
Is that the reason why? Or is it because we're in communication with them and we're trying to...
No, I think what we're doing is again, we're projecting. We're projecting human reactions and human priorities onto a race that may be so alien to us, no pun intended, that this type of reasoning just would not apply. You know, we would suspect, you know, another human race to invade us, right? From another planet, let's say they were just like us and they were about equal in technology, maybe a little bit better than us, they would come in and invade us the way we invade other countries.
Right.
But this may not be that kind of situation. We may be looking at something entirely different. And, you know, they're already here. So there's probably no need to invade unless they need our resources for some reason, which doesn't seem to really to be the case as far as I can tell.
Now, with Elizondo and Chris Mellon, I'm really interested in what these two guys know. But has the Department of Defense stepped in and tried to silence them? In other words, question what they actually know. They must be sitting around going, you know, what do we tell them? What did they have access to? Can we go back and look and see what files they were accessing on their computers before they left the department?
No, I don't think so. And I think the reason why is because these people are still patriots, right? They took oaths and they have security clearances. They had security clearances. They probably still maintain them for a certain period of time. And, you know, they're assured of loyalty. So they're not going to go and break confidences. I think if they're talking, like Chris Mellon, whom I've met, and some of the others, these are people who are pretty reputable in their own fields. They have not done anything that would jeopardize national security, for instance, or anything like that. So what they're doing, I mean, part of the reason why Tom had this access is because of the non-confrontational way, that the approach that he took to the government. It wasn't like the UFO community, which, you know, either doesn't believe the government and believes they're withholding stuff or they're manipulating us. Tom went in and said, listen, you know, tell us what you can. If you can't tell us, don't tell us, but don't, you know, at least don't lie to us. But if you can tell us something, we want to work with you, because there's a lot of people out there who suspect that this phenomenon is real, or they know it's real, they've had the experiences. Let's move this ball down the field just a little bit.
Our guest, sorry, Peter, let me jump in. We're taking a break right here. Our guest tonight's Peter Lavenda. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Peter and your phone calls next. This is Coast to Coast AM. The Kinks. What a track. All of their tracks are good, especially that whole era. Late 60s Kinks, absolutely amazing. That whole British invasion thing was unreal. There you go. It's Friday night. It's open lines. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest is Peter Lavenda. More of your phone calls are next. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sitting in for George Norrie tonight, it is a Friday. Open lines for the rest of the evening. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest is Peter Lavenda. And let's go straight back to the phones. Let's go out west. Thomas in La Jolla. Thomas, you're up next on Coast.
Hi, Jimmy. Thank you for taking my call. And Peter, I truly appreciate your research. In fact, the book that I appreciate that you wrote was on Chinese alchemy, Taoism, and the Kabbalah. Truly a great work.
Thank you.
My question, Peter, is it's interesting that you mentioned the 1951 movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, in which Michael Rennie as Klaatu heals himself twice. The second time, he's actually dead and is resurrected by his robot, Gort. Has the 70-year conversation been more than hardware? and reverse engineering hardware. Perhaps the real issue is biotechnology, and perhaps we're talking about extraterrestrial and or ultra-dimensional biological resurrection and or biological immortality. Is that the real issue more than hardware? That's my question.
Thank you, Thomas. Peter,
yeah,
biological and not hardware?
I mean, hardware is only part of the issue because we have a specific way of looking at hardware, at machines, right? Which is why this is called the Secret Machines Project. We tend to think of UFOs in terms of machinery. And we are at the stage ourselves as human beings in developing biological and machine interfaces. We're getting to the point where we're talking about artificial intelligence, developing robots, cyborgs, that sort of thing, which would have intelligence, which would have organic parts, or organic beings like us with machine parts, essentially. If we're talking about that now at our level of development, if what is another race, let's say an alien race, going to have that would be even more advanced than that or different than that? Are the aliens that we're talking about that we think of in popular literature, aren't they maybe something along those lines as opposed to, you know, beings walking around the way we think of them?
Sure.
Maybe they're already, you know, just machines. Maybe it's machines, flying machines, for instance. And what your caller mentioned as far as that's concerned, the sort of biotechnology interface and the idea of ultra-terrestrials, which is something that Hal Puthoff has mentioned in his own work, his belief that we're talking not about extraterrestrials, but about ultra-terrestrials. People who are actually, or beings that are actually on the planet with us, but in a slightly different frame, whether it's time, space, another dimension, or whatever, but people that are occupying this space with us in some way.
Different frequency. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Different frequency, basically.
Yeah.
So Hal, of course, is a major part of this program, and he's bringing his background to bear where this project is concerned as well. So, yes, we're talking about that as well, which is one of the reasons why we have geneticists on board and neurobiologists, because this is not just about machinery the way we understand machines. It could be that we ourselves are a kind of machine, and what we're trying to do is get to the ghost in the machine. We're trying to get to the consciousness element, and that may be the part that we need to understand what the UFO phenomenon really is.
Let's go back out east. Let's go to Danny in Queens, New York. Danny, you're up next on Coast.
Hi. Peter Lavandia, hello.
Good. Hi, how are you?
A huge, huge, huge fan of yours. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Thank you.
I have so many questions.
Well, give us one, Danny. Give us your best question.
Here's the hardest one I have. I was... you were part of my trinity. It was, of course, Bud Hopkins, Dr. David Jacobs, Dr. Stephen Greer. I trust in science and proof, not pseudoscience. I don't take into account some of the things you wrote. It seemed a little personal. And you are a doctor. You are a giver of knowledge. You're mixing yourself up with these rock stars who really don't know what they're talking about. Dude, stay away from them. You're way smarter than them.
Well, there you go, Danny. Thank you for the observation there. Stay away from the rock stars.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Jimmy?
My conversations with Tom over the last couple of years have been very, very cool. And I relate to Tom because we're both musicians, we're both guitar players. And so we can start off our conversation at that level with the mutual respect. So I approach Tom way different. I have the same, I'm the opposite of what our caller just said, Danny. I respect Tom because he comes from a musical background just like myself. And we have the same questions and we're going down that same path. You know, and that's really true. So I commend him. Now, on the flip side, and this is just my opinion, I'd love to hear the caller's comment on this. I'm not sure if I would be the front man for the company. I could be the front man for a band out of San Diego called Blink 182. Mm-hmm. But being the front man of a technological research and development company and being the spokesperson for that, I think I would give up those reins and let somebody else do the talking. But that's just my opinion. And I've told you that before. So, yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go out west. Let's go right here in Los Angeles, California. Gore, you're up next on Coast.
Thank you for taking the call. Hey, I have a question for Peter. Peter, what do you think of underwater UFO bases? That's my question to you. And the second question is, as far as SETI goes, what's your opinion on that program? Thank you.
Okay. Underwater bases, I think there's probably been more evidence for underwater bases than almost anything else. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about that, and I think that that's definitely, you know, there's been a lot of sightings over water and of machines descending into oceans or rising up out of oceans or lakes. So, I mean, that's an obvious, that's a no-brainer. I think that we don't have to look at these machines as something that is strictly land-based or land and air. It would have to be land, sea, and air, which is what we kind of expect for an advanced technology. As far as CT is concerned, I don't know if people are really aware that there's actually a protocol. There's kind of a CT protocol that the governments of the world have kind of joined in. It's a non-binding agreement as to how to handle contact. If one country makes initial contact, they're supposed to keep it under wraps, verify it, and then share it with the other governments of the world, and then somebody decides at some point they're going to make it public. The article on China, what if China is the first one to make contact, for instance, raises this question. This is a very serious question, and again, you know, if we keep focusing in the wrong place, we're going to miss the bigger story.
That's right.
And the bigger story here may be not just if another country is the first to make contact, but with the advance of technology in the hands of individual human beings, of individual people in small groups, what if a fringe group somewhere makes contact first, real verifiable contact? Or what if the Chinese telescope array, or an American, or a European, anyone, finds out that there's a communication that's verifiable coming from another star, and now they're wondering how to respond? But a fringe group decides on their own to respond and does it stupidly or does it in such a way as to cause problems for all the rest of us on this planet. The potential for danger is very, very high. The potential for doing something really stupid is very, very high, especially as now we're getting technology in the hands of everyone. There's a kind of democratic process taking place, but at the same time, are we as individuals smart enough to know how to handle this? And with the probability that our security systems, our internet communications and all the rest of it have become so jeopardized through hacking and through everything else, there's a very real possibility that at one point there's going to be some sort of CT-like contact, you know, and we're going to find a star that's communicating with us, and somebody, it could even be a terrorist group, let's say, or any other kind of group, decides on their own to respond. We have to think of these things. We have to look at it from the possibility that there's a national and an international security issue at stake as well, which is not to say we have to regard contact as something inherently evil or dangerous, or that the whatever these other beings may be would have our worst interests at heart. We don't have to take that, but we do have to think rationally. How do we protect ourselves? And this is going to become a really big issue as technology becomes more and more available to everyone.
It certainly will. It certainly will. And we have to look at it that way. I don't think we have a choice. You know, certainly when it comes to our intelligence, how long we have been here, conservatively, we could say we've been thinking in a technical sense, technological sense, for maybe 2,000 years. Right. 100 years of real advancement, 100 years. Well, if there's something out there that is a million years jump started on us, then that's the only way that we have to make sure that we are communicating correctly. the mistakes, the possibility for a mistake is extreme. Let's go to the first time caller line. Samson out in Daytona Beach, Florida. You're up next on Coast.
Well, Jimmy.
Yes.
Jimmy Church.
Yes, Samson.
Samson is indubitably pleased and honored to be on the show tonight.
Yeah, right on, Samson.
Well, Samson's got a theory about this. He's been investigating it for many, 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 many years. Now, you have to take into consideration that these beings, if they come here, they have to be so advanced as to be able to travel, who knows, millions of light years to get to us. And where are we in the Milky Way? We're way out in the boonies, way out in the edge, where, like, you know, out in the sticks. So they're way out here. They finally get here. And what do? Well, you hear the stories of these abductees. Now, if it's true and they're abducted, what's the first thing that these alien beings do? They anally probe these people. What's up with that, Jimmy?
I don't know, Samson, but thanks for the phone call. I will say this, you know, we make jokes about that, and it has been around for a while. But this is the thing, Peter, I would like your opinion on this. If us humans, we discover life on another planet and we take off and we discover life, what are we going to do? It doesn't have to be intelligent life. It could be, you know, just some animals living on the planet. What are we going to do? We're going to collect them, throw them on our ship, and come back to Earth with it, right?
Right.
We do the same thing when we go to an island and we discover a new species inside of the rainforest. What are we doing? We're not thinking about that alien's family or that animal's family, right? You take this creature from the Amazon rainforest, you collect it, and you bring it back to your university and you name it, and this new species, nobody is going to raise their hand and go, did you consider the homeless children now that were you left behind in the rainforest that were waiting for mom and dad to come back?
Right.
It's the same thing if aliens, you know, come to this planet and are investigating. We have to think like humans, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, that's one way of approaching the problem, is to project what we would do onto them and not see it as anything particularly different. But there may be a completely different agenda where all of this is concerned, and it may once again be something really more psychological and, let's say psychological. That's a very good, that's a simple word to use. And think of it as a psychological problem. You know, these experiences that people have with abduction, look at the common denominators, look at what they're talking about. I mean, the novel that I just completed, which will be out, it won't be out next month, Jimmy, it'll be out in the spring.
Oh, okay.
Called Dunwich, explores exactly this idea, this whole, you know, idea of the alien abductions and what they might mean, and within a kind of a Lovecraft universe. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've been studying it for a long time. The alien abduction thing has been fascinating to me because, you know, John Mack and, you know, and Jacobs and all these guys working on this problem, because it is, you know, it's a problem. And it's somehow linked together with the UFO phenomenon. So is this all linked together? Is this part of the same phenomenon? That's the first question, because we're assuming that it is. We're making a kind of a strange assumption. It's not always evident that there's a UFO involved with an abduction. Sometimes these abductions take place without a UFO being involved. So we have to kind of analyze all this and look at this and say, is this, you know, the presence of, let's say, ultra-terrestrials, the way Hal Puthoff would characterize it? Is this a control mechanism like Jacques Vallée talks about it? Is this entire UFO phenomenon some way of trying to control something, control a message on the planet in some way? You know, these are all people who've collaborated with us and contributed to this project, and it's part of the philosophy we have to take on board when we start talking about this. What's really taking place? How can we characterize this in such a way that we could again advance the ball a little bit further down the field? Because this stuff is happening all the time. As I say, the documentation on this is enormous, which is why I'm a believer, even though I've never had an experience with a UFO. But
what is the documentation telling us? You know, what is there? We know that the phenomenon exists. Now we have to go further. We have to really figure out what it is and what its effect has been on our biology, on our culture, on the way we look at the world, because the influence has been there. As I wrote in the first book, In Gods, something happened to humanity about, let's say, 20, 25,000 years ago that jump-started civilizations all across the globe, all with kind of the same ideas about death and rebirth, about coming down from the stars, going back to the stars. Something took place, something happened. And, you know, what was that? And is alien abduction part of the key to that mystery? Is it helping us to understand what happened back at that time?
Well, there's another way to look at this, too. When we look at the abduction and the abductees, the experiencers out there number not in the tens, not in the thousands, but we're talking about millions of people with the same story. Either you have a million or 2 million people or more that are completely bonkers, or we have a phenomenon here and there is something going on and we need to address it.
Yeah, there is, obviously. And I think that what we have to do is stop, like I said at the very beginning of this, and I remember our first conversations on the air, Jimmy, about this. Our assumption in this project is not, we're not trying to prove that the phenomenon exists. What we're trying to do is go to the next level. We assume the phenomenon exists. We accept that it exists. We accept that it's real. Now what? We have to get to that next point, because we have to be prepared for whatever happens. What if there is, as you talk about, an alien invasion, for instance, or what if there is some very dramatic form of contact? Are we prepared to handle it?
Exactly. No. Peter, hang out. I'm going to say good night right after this short break. So just stay right there. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back.